Mama Africa, I say. And welcome to Ecolibrium on CKUT 90.3 FM. This is your host, Ryan Young. Welcome to the show. We're going to start off with a little bit of music, and this is Bobby Womack, and the tune, A Change Is Gonna Come, which of course is an old Sam Cooke tune, from the album Home Is Where the Heart Is, from 1976.
I want to do this song on behalf of a very good friend of mine. Legend in his own time, Sam Cooke. I was born by the river in an old tent. Oh, just like the river I've been running ever since. It's been a long, long time coming, but I know change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will. It's been through hard living. It makes me afraid to die. Cause I don't know what's up there beyond the sky.
And that was A Change Is Gonna Come by Bobby Womack and the Brotherhood from the 1976 album Home Is Where the Heart Is. You are listening to Ecolibrium on CKUT 90.3 FM. This is your host, Ryan Young. So, this week, this episode of Ecolibrium, we are playing the second part of an interview that Kevin Gonesson-Deer did last fall in 2021. It was an interview done, I believe, by students from McGill University, and it is featured on the McGill University YouTube channel, and it's called Environment and Sustainability with Gonesson-Deer, who actually is a McGill alumnus. He did his Bachelor of Education at McGill University. But more importantly, he's a Ganye Gahaga, or Mohawk, faith keeper in his traditional longhouse in Ganawage. And this talk, or this interview that they did with him, the second part, I'm going to replay some part of what you already heard last week so that it makes sense. But he's talking about how there was a shift in indigenous culture, politics, spirituality, when the Oka crisis happened in 1990. So he's talking here about approaching Mayor Ouellette from Oka about not expanding the golf course that would include expanding it on their cemetery, the Gunasatage Cemetery. So here is Kevin Deer now.
But anyway, so his attitude was, well, you know, we're going to do what we want. So myself and two other individuals, we went to his office. We tried to give him a letter. He wouldn't see it, but we left it with his administrative assistant. And we said, that's sacrilegious. Leave our ancestors alone. Don't go bother that cemetery. But his attitude was, again, there's only one law, Canadian law. And you're a Canadian, whether you like it or not. I'll never be a Canadian, I'll never be American, even though I was born there. First and foremost, I'm an Ogunhue, and we have our own government. That's the Hiawatha Belt, they call it, the five nations showing the great tree and the two nations on each side. And that even influenced the United States. Benjamin Franklin asked our Confederacy to go to his Albany Plan of the Union in 1754. And there was a great Mohawk orator by the name of Hendricks. He explained our government, our constitution. And then they took some of that and then developed their own so-called country. But anyway, so getting back to Mayor Ouellette, you know, so then he sends in his SQ. Corporal May gets shot. We go to that whole 78-day standoff. But even prior to that, what happened was Mohawks started killing Mohawks because of the idea of super bingos and casinos and moving ahead. And there were some people that were reluctant and didn't want that. So there was a conflict that arose. And then two men in Akwesasne lost their lives. That was on May 1st of 1990 on a Tuesday. Friday night, I took a ride to Six Nations, and Saturday, I went to go visit one of my good friend, Chief. And when I got there, his wife says, "You got to talk to Jake. You know, Akwesasne, they're going through turmoil now." So Jake was disking his garden, and he shut the tractor off, and we started to talk. You know, what could we do? And Jake says, "Well, I'll call a meeting." So he did call a meeting, and some of the chiefs and the clan mothers and some of the faith keepers and people, we had a meeting at his house. And the decision was, we're going to go call for the return of the peacemaker. Because when the peacemaker completed our league, our house, our ways of doing the restructuring from spiritual, social and political, he said in the future, if this time ever would come to be, that we would do this ceremony. So we did, and that happened on Sunday morning, May 6th of 1990. So we asked for this intervention. So right after that, Elijah Harper gets up in the Manitoba legislature with an eagle feather and calls the Meech Lake Accord. July 11th, 1990, we get in the 78-day standoff. So when we did that ceremony, and then you look at the things that started to happen, the indigenous spiritual resurrection started to intensify. And even more now, people started to pick up their language, their history. And this patriarchal foreign system that is keeping us suppressed is now being where it's going to be put in its place. Because many things happened. Tom Porter took a group of Mohawks into the Mohawk Valley. Orville Looking Horse, who carries that sacred bundle from the white buffalo calf woman. A miracle, the first white buffalo was born. So just like in the old country, the Magi, they prophesied that Jesus would be born. Our ancestors and the knowledge keepers, the ones who knew, they all went and they offered gifts to that white buffalo because she said, "I'm going to return when the humans will be in trouble." And then on and on it goes. Many different things started to happen from that time. And then even I was part of a delegation where we, well, not a delegation, but a group of people, where we went into ceremony and we consulted with our ancestors. And the ancestors said, "Now what we got to do is we got to call on the horsepower. The horses have to come across this land. They have to start in the west where our grandfather, the Thunder Beings, live. And that is going to begin wiping the tears of the seventh generation and start the healing of the Mother Earth." And those horses left in Vernon, British Columbia in the spring of 2003. And other people joined with them. And we coordinated a youth and elder summit. And those horses arrived at Six Nations on August 27, 2004. The late Chief Jake Swamp wrote a proclamation, and then the youth did a relay run and they took that message to the United Nations. A few years later, 2007, then we have now Harper, or was it 2008? I think it was 2008. Harper acknowledging now the damage of the residential schools. And then we have now the beginnings of UNDRIP. So these ancestors and these spirits began to work about what was going to begin to start to happen now. So, and then in that time, Because if we look and we ask ourselves, so, you know, what's the significance of all of this? So I talk about the indigenous spiritual resurrection, all of this stuff, and there's so much more that's happening. Well, I'm only talking about some of the stuff that I have been involved with. You know, then we had the Idle No More movement. We have Standing Rock. We have all of the things that have happened. You know, then when the Wet'suwet'en came down here, first they stopped in Tandanegat, then they came here, and we did that ceremony, and that was just before COVID. That was in February, and then March we went into everything slowing down. And there was this woman on Facebook. I don't know who she was. I should have taken her name down and all of that, but I got inspired by what she said. She says, imagine that. You know, we tried to put an economic slowdown on Canada, because it did. That main link train that was blocked, the corridor from Tyendinaga, because it affected Toronto and everything coming from the west, you know, was starting to have an economic slowdown in Canada. And then the train bridge was blocked here. So then this girl on Facebook said, we were doing our jingle dresses, doing all of our songs and dances and all that. And Mother Earth says, you know what? I hear what yous are doing. So what I'm going to do is I'll show you how you do an economic slowdown. Then bam, here comes COVID. And then the world slowed down. And it was like the Earth Mother got a Band-Aid for a little while. Not so many planes traveling and cars and all of that. Nobody traveling into work. The animals started to come back into cities. Some of the streams started to flow clean again. Because our mother is trying to show us, you know what? You better change what you're doing. And this is what we're going through right now with all of this. But anyway, so getting back to... After we called for the return of the peacemaker, and then in the vision quest and the fast, I said, what was the significance of that when we did that ceremony calling for the return? And the message that came when I was in that fasting vision quest was, you know what, the peacemaker never left. The peacemaker is in the sacred center of your being. And I thought to myself, wow, that's pretty amazing. You know, Black Elk talks about being at the hub of the universe, where movement and stillness become one. Movement is time, stillness is eternity. And he thought it was Harney Peak. But then when he fully understood what he was experiencing, he understood that that hub of the universe is right here. But it's not only there, it's right in you. It's in you. That sacred center. So the peacemaker, that, or now in our language we call the sacred fire. You know, all of these things all started to coalesce and come together. And I thought to myself, wow, that's pretty amazing. So the first thing that I had to do when I came down from my vision quest is this thing. I had to love it. And not condemn it anymore and think that my legs are too skinny or I'm not handsome enough or all these stuff where I was in conflict with it. And just come to this idea of loving it and being at one with it. And all of that pain and that hurt that I was angry about and all of that, that all went. And I was transformed. All of these things all coalesced. So I was feeling so good about it. So I was a teacher, and I went to go share it with one of the school principals. I shared it with some of the teachers. So the following year, there was five more. So six of us, we went and we went Vision Quest again. There was a school principal, two school teachers, and two parents. And one was working with community services. So they went on Vision Quest and they had this experience. So then we started rites of passage for our youth. And the community organization, community services, helped us with some funding and all of that. And there was a whole group that went through this this vision quest and fasting, which was a great thing. But anyway, so finding that peacemaker in, and as I said, that sacred fire, or whatever you want to call it. And then just 2 years ago now, what happened was I was introduced to transcendental meditation. I remember my favorite rock band was the Beatles growing up. And one time I saw this guy who looked like Jesus. They were all around him. I didn't know who he was. They said, that's the Maharishi. And he introduced the Beatles to transcendental meditation. And then 2 years ago, I was introduced to it. And for me, right away, I could relate to it because you close your eyes and then you go inward and you connect with the cosmic intelligence of the universe. So that's all consistent with the transformation that we have to go through. So we started in Ganawage. It's 2 years old now. It's called Skana Iga, Skana, peace. Iga is here. And then a group of us have gone through this orientation about how to do that. And we're looking at helping our people to use another form of a tool to achieve well-being. So anyway, calling for that spiritual intervention and all the things that happened. So then in September, this September is going to be 6 years ago now, I got involved with a group of people in the United States out of just outside of Boston. Because even in our language, when we talk about the United States, we talk about Wasturanunge. Our people couldn't say Boston, so they said Waston. So when we talk about Wasturanunge, we're talking about the whole United States. All has the root word of Boston in it, because that's where the United States was born. Now that's where the Pilgrims, the Mayflower, all that started, right out of Plymouth Rock and Cape Cod. So anyway, Tom Porter was supposed to go. This guy was wanting Tom to go, but then I was at Ganat Zorege, and Tom said, hey, Kevin, you want to go to near Boston? I said, for what? He said, there's this guy, I don't really know him, but he said he wants to know about our ways. I said, okay, I'll take all my teachers with me. I went. So then he starts talking to me about his grandfather and how he comes from, a family of money, influence, and power. And then he started informing me about monetary matters. And you know what happened in 1913 when Congress signed the Federal Reserve Act. And then what happened to prior to that when the bankers all got together in Jekyll Island and they, they had this plan about how they were going to begin to enslave the people through, different things that they were going to do with taxation and through the administrative process, even their own people start to take away their liberties and all of that. And then what would happen is through this process, the bankers would get more powerful, and then that would lead to what we have now, where the multinational corporations now are the ones that, are the new kings. The new kings in the new world. So anyway, so what happens is I start getting educated about monetary matters, about how all the money that we carry on us is fiat currency. In 1971, Nixon took it off the gold standard. So money is backed by nothing. The only reason why this money works is because of public confidence. And the other thing about it is that it's all debt-based. Because in order for this thing to work, everybody has to go in debt. Because if everybody paid off their debts, the whole house of cards collapses. And then you go to a bank. You want to go get a mortgage for a house, a car. They don't even have that amount of money in their vault. You go to a bank, you open up a mortgage, and right then and there, they create money out of thin air. And when I found out how this system works, I said to myself, what the heck? But I'm glad that I did get educated. Because now, when I'm going to go and be part of negotiations about anything, and the facade, and the lies, and the deceit that is being perpetrated every day by the so-called ruling governments with this money and everything that they says that runs the world. If our ancestors knew about how corrupt the system is, just the idea of money that says, well, if I have this money and I accumulate it, well, all of a sudden I'm better than you. Because now I got power. And because I got power, I can manipulate and I can control you. Or if they knew that the king and the Pope had ordained these papal bulls that said when you get to the New World, if they're not Christian, get rid of them. But yet they want to make treaty with us. They're already coming to the table with ulterior motive that they're not being truthful and honest. You can't make any agreements that way. Go to a lawyer right now, and if it could be proven that you came to the table with deceit, then that contract is not valid. So all of these so-called treaties that the Europeans said, hey, extinguish title to these lands, there's no such thing as that. We don't even own it. It belongs to those future generations coming. All we do is we have stewardship over it. But all the settlers, you're in treaty agreement with us. And all our people said is, we will coexist. You have the depth of a plow. You're bringing wheat, you're bringing chickens, cows. Well, the depth of a plow for your sustenance. But beyond that, that's ours. Because you didn't come over here with any land. You know, but then it's all of this. But no, as I said, we're challenging that because we're smart now. We're educated. You know, I'm glad I got my education. I can speak this foreign language. I was able to read books. But I'm glad that I picked up my own language, my own culture, all of these things. Because now there's a whole set of different ways of understanding now that we have to begin to talk about. And they're not going to like it because it's going to shake the core of what their foundation is based on, and it's based on lies, which is based on sand, and because it's based on sand, that house cannot stand. And that's the fear. That's what they don't like. And then now we have these 215 children whose spirits have resurrected up from the dead. And this is what's happening, because the fear that they used, first of all, with their religion and hell and devil and burning and all of that, and then their form of government, and then their money, all of this lies and deceit that was used so they could try to establish and say, this is our country. We will kill the Indian to save the man. And now what's happening is these kids are resurrecting up from the dead. And as they're resurrecting up of the dead, this curse and this spell, that's what I call it, a curse and a spell that originated from the old country to cover our eyes, is now being lifted. And now majority of people are coming to the realization that we've been lied to, that we've all been used, manipulated, and controlled by the ruling elites and the multinational corporations. And now because of global warming and climate change, all of these things are coalescing. And hopefully they're bringing us to this understanding that all of us, as human beings, we better start seeing different. We better start hearing different. We better start speaking different. And together, we better start working and doing different. Because time is of the essence. If we don't, we don't have to be around. We'll all be gone in a very short period of time. And in the final analysis, we could say, you know what? We were so smart. We had all of these Ivy universities and institutions, higher forms of learning. Well, yet the very thing that sustains us and gives us everything that we need every day, we destroyed it in our own stupidity. And this is where we are. So now, you know, on Canada Day, Nakas had asked me if I would go to Montreal near the base of Jean Mons, the Mount Royal. I said, this time when I go, I said, I'm not just going to talk. I says, I want to make a fire. Because we're talking about the sacred fire. That aura, sea of orange, every child matters, that you see across this land is Odzire. It's that bright orange. The Ojibwe is talking about igniting the eighth and final fire. This is where we are. Because in that prophecy it says that the day is coming where we're going to ask the brothers and sisters that originated from across the salt water to remove those masks of lies, deception, and deceit and come from the heart. First time I heard that story was in 1986 at Cape Croker. There was an elders gathering there and I never forgot it. And now today, we're wearing masks. There's a sea of orange. We're talking about that sacred fire now that everybody is coming to see, because now it's our common humanity and our common survival that is at stake. And in all of the things that I'm doing right now in my position at FNTI as the Director of Indigenous Knowledge, which is in Tiendanega, which is where the peacemaker was born, which is where we called for the return of the peacemaker on Sunday morning on May 6, 1990. And now in my work plan, I engaged our own Confederacy knowledge keepers about our prophecy. You can go online right now. You can punch in Prophecy Gathering FNTI. And I got Inuit from the Inuit, North America, Central America, the Aztec and the Mayan leaders, spiritual leaders, to the Kogi in South America. We're all on there talking about these times that we are in. That was the second part of my four step. The third step now is I'm going to engage the big ship with sails. All right, scientists, visionaries, yous are mainly responsible for all of this progress and technology. We want to know right now, where are we? And where are we headed in the next 10 years? And I hope to complete that by the end of September. And it'll be on YouTube. And as I said, it's being hosted by our organization, FNTI. And then from some end of September to Christmas, then I'm going to coordinate a think tank. And we're going to bring the best of our canoe, our indigenous wisdom, the best of the European with sails and everything that came from across the salt water, and say, okay, what can we agree on? What are the goals? What are the objectives? And what are the recommendations? And then we put it out to every level of government, from local, municipal, provincial, state, federal, and beyond. And this time, if you don't want to listen to what we're saying that is infused with the indigenous wisdom of this Turtle Island, well then whatever's coming down the road, don't say you haven't been warned. Because when Mother Nature, as I said, is going to discipline us, she has no mercy, none. And then if we need a whooping because of our short-sightedness, well, we deserve it. But hopefully, the powers that be will be shaking in their feet and say, we better start listening to the indigenous wisdom of this Turtle Island anyway, because this knowledge is born from here. Because I can't talk about the whole country or what exists over there, because that's over there. But here we could talk about it, because this is all part of our creation story and how we understand. So now if we're looking at solutions, so I'm going to end with one final story about the Bretton Woods Hotel. So when I meet with this gentleman from Wasturonungi near Boston area, and I get educated about monetary matters. So he has this idea that we're going to go to Bretton Woods, which is a 3-hour ride from here. The highest mountain is called Mount Washington in this, what they call the Northern Kingdom. And this friend of mine, his great-grandfather was there in the 1880s, and he went to the apex of Mount Washington, put a stake in the ground, and he says, I'm renaming this mountain Mount Washington after George Washington. And today, that's the name it carries. But at the base of the Mount Washington Hotel is a famous hotel. It's called the Bretton Woods Hotel. So post-World War II, the so-called leaders of the world got together, 44 nations representing 744 delegates or thereabouts. They met for 3 weeks, and only men, because they got the brains. So all these men got together. And this was the brainchild that they introduced to the world. The World Bank, the International Monetary Fund, General Agreement on Trades and Tariffs, which is now the World Trade Organization. And they're in bed with the Federal Reserve. And as you know, the Federal Reserve is a private corporation. The United States doesn't even print their own money. There was a guy in England, his name was Rothschild. And here's what he said approximately maybe 1760 or thereabouts. He says, I care not which puppet you elect to sit on the throne of England, because whoever controls the money controls the power. And I control the money. When we ask ourselves today, who controls the money? It's not the government, because there's people that got more money than government. Anyway, so this is what they did. So I asked the question, I says, when that so-called big historic meeting took place, I says, where was the Ogwahunwe, meaning us, spiritual people that have an essence forever? They said, you people were not even considered. I says, and you know what, that's good. Because where the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund and where this whole thing went around the world to enslave the people, we had nothing to do with it. So anyway, for 8 days, we went all around that mountain in that area, meeting with bankers, mayors, politicians, ordinary people, trying to educate them about monetary matters. And every place where we stopped, I went to running water. Didn't matter how, but that water had to be flowing. Took my sacred tobacco, I made a fire, and I spoke to our ancestors and all the sacred energy. And I said, this curse, again, and this spell that causes people to kill, to go to war, to fight, because money, money, more power, that's over. The spirits are going to work and are going to educate people just like me about monetary matters, and you're not going to have any more control over us. So I did that. And I called for, again, deep divine spiritual intervention. From Crazy Horse to Geronimo to Black Elk to Sitting Bull to Tecumseh, to all of those great ones that come on, intervene, help us. This thing now can't continue if we got that responsibility to the future generations. Anyway, and then Stuart, what he did was, well, he called on all of those signatories to the Bretton Woods Agreement and all of that, and what they could start to do different. So anyway, he's of European descent. So he did what he thought he would do, and I did what I thought I would do. He claims that he's being inspired by his grandfather, and I'm being inspired by my grandpa. Because when my grandpa, after he had died, he came to me in a dream. And he told me all kind of stuff. He showed me what it's like when we die, where we're going. And I even asked him, I said, Grandpa, so I don't understand. How do we communicate like this and you're supposed to be dead? So there's no such thing as that. He said, you'll see. He said, when you pass on, he says, we go into the Great Sky World Council. All of us. And he says, in the center of that council is a little drop of water. And he says, we're always intervening from the spirit to the physical, back and forth, never stop. Because he said, if we, the divine spiritual intervention, ever stop, then he said, this earth dries up and there's no more life. So he says, come on, we're going to get strawberries. So the next road over, when I was a kid, there was all bush there. There used to be strawberries, choke cherries, raspberries. So that's where we were. And we got right near there and I grabbed his arm. Grandpa, I said, come on, tell me more about this place. I said, because I know where I'm going now when I die. No, he said, I'm in a hurry. He said, they're waiting for me. I got to get back. I remember I got up that morning. I said, wow. I don't care if the Pope is here and he tells me, what? Without a doubt, you know where you're going when you die? Absolutely. Well, he could say that's blasphemous. Who the hell are you to talk like that? It doesn't matter. You're a human being just like me. When you go to your bathroom, just like everybody else, all of our shit smells, so don't think you're better than anybody else. So the whole idea is that we have to understand our common humanity and that we're all going to die one day and we're all equal here. There is no hierarchy. You know, but people, we put these people in positions and we don't see that we're not supposed to do that. We're all supposed to put our collective mind together how we could make things better. So anyway, we're at Bretton Woods now. And on the last day, so the guy who coordinated all of this, he says, well, gonna sew him. He says, what do you think about the solution moving forward? I says, well, before Europeans got here, we had no money. We had no jails, we had no stealing. It was one dish with one spoon. We all worked together or we all suffered together. There's no hierarchy. And even in our government, if you want to be a chief, when you call the people together, all of your people eat first. You're the last one as a chief. Because the needs of all your people is put first. Imagine that. If the politicians understood that, there'd be no street people. There'd be no people that are hungry and starving. Because if they're in position of power, your so-called power then, if this is for your people, so your people should be up here. But it's the other way around. So I said, no, you introduced this money. I said, if we have to have money, then what's going to happen is money will work for us. We're not going to be slaves to money. And if we have to have some type of a repository or something like that where we put this thing that says that we could use it for the exchange of goods and services or what have you, then I said what we need is an indigenous spiritual world bank. Because right now the way the system is run, it's not based on spirituality. It's based on greed, power, manipulation, control, resource extraction. The rich get rich, the poor get poorer. Wars are created, they go in there. When you fully understand the system, you see how corrupt it is. So what I said is we need a spiritual World Bank. And then this money will get redistributed based on three principles. Number one, world peace. No more military industrial complex where trillions of dollars are spent in armaments. World peace. Number two, environmental stewardship. This whole earth is the Garden of Eden. It's a sacred body of the Mother Earth. You get married, your wife, her whole body is sacred. There's not one part that you say that, well, I dislike this part of you. The whole earth is holy, holy land. Not just in the Middle East where they think that's holy land. The whole earth is holy land. So environmental stewardship, let's get back to planting, let's have trees, let's get the heck off of these fossil fuels and get back to a more living like the Amish. No electricity, no cars, simple. So environmental stewardship. And number three, we eradicate every form of so-called poverty and famine worldwide. So in order to do that means we're not going to have any more rich people than ruling elites. Because what they got to do is they're going to have to share, start giving away. Give away your wealth and all of that. And the people that are less advantaged, bring them up to scale. Just like how it was before you got here. We had no money. We all prosper together or we all suffer together. Heck, there was some growing European men. They came to me with tears in their eyes, crying. They were so touched by what I said. They said, buddy, if you could pull this off, you'd be our savior. And I don't want to be nobody's savior. But all I will say is that with the knowledge that I acquired about understanding the lies, the deceit, more people need to understand it so that together we can change it, because it's all full of lies, deceit, and corruption. And if everybody understood the ideas and principles that I'm talking about right now, all the wars end, all the murders end, all the rapes end, all the missing and murdered indigenous end, all of this so-called racial tension and all of that ends. Because then we see that when we look at each other, we see the Great Spirit, or we see God, or we see that sacred fire. And then when we get it, we all change. We change the relationship with ourselves, we change our relationship with each other, we change the relationship of how we understand the earth, we change our relationship with our ancestors and where we're going when we leave this place. And that's the simplicity and the beauty of it all. But it's all been convoluted, it's all been hijacked and manipulated, and we as people are nothing but pawns in the game of monopoly, which is being monopolized, and we are nothing but economic slaves that are being used, abused, misused, and when we're done, they don't care. So all of this, capitalism, the idea of looking at the earth as something that could be plundered, is now bringing us to our existential crisis. That we better get a handle on it, because time is of the essence now. So the universities, all of these so-called higher institutions of knowledge better start to retool their curriculums and all of that, and get people to understand, you know, getting back to less is more, simple life, whatever you could do to kind of like limit your impact. Like in my basement, I got a Harley Davidson, but that thing is going to collect cobwebs. I used that once this summer, but now they talked about code red. I said I ain't using it, because I'm not just going to go on a joyride and then I'm adding more carbon monoxide to the natural world. I'm not going to be flying. I'm not taking no vacations. I don't care if I don't have to go anywhere. The less I stay home and be and be grounded, the happier I am, because in my lifestyle, and because that's what it comes down to. What are we all going to start to do different? We can't leave it on government, because we have to understand that we are part and parcel of the process too. You know, not buying clothes just because you think you got to buy it. Spending for nothing. I got enough clothes. I got enough shoes. I don't need anything. Some of my clothes, my pants, were from 25 years ago when I was a school teacher. I still fit it in the same size. So to me, it doesn't matter. But the whole idea is we got to look at new ways of doing. And I even go so far as saying that even one day, there's nothing going to prevent us from making our own currency where we have trade and commerce between our own reservations and all out to help our own people. Because the way the taxes, they're being taxed, you know, ordinary Canadians and all of that are going to rebel at some point in time and say, you know what, we can't go along like this anymore. And then they'll probably all be wanting to get with us and saying, hey, how could we be like you, though? We want to understand your teachings, your form of government, and how you do things. But yeah, so we need a new economic model. We need new currency. We have to start with leveling out the playing field. The more rich, but at the same time, the more poor. And I know for some people that have a lot, you know, they're going to say, like, heck, I ain't giving away anything of my stuff. Well, don't. Stay in your mindset, but you better not have kids. Or if you have grandkids, then I feel sorry for you because of your attitude and your thinking, because then you don't love them. Because if you love them, you say, well, I better start looking around and I better start to divest and share and change all of this stuff because we're in it. Time is of the essence. And a lot of people with what I'm working now, as I said, in the third part of bringing people now together from the big ship with sails, you know, the leading scientists, visionaries, and all of that. When you ask them, what is the solution? Most of the ones that I heard talk so far said indigenous knowledge. We're having respect for the land, the water, the forest, the trees, all of this that sustains us. Because that's the very thing that sustains the sacred breath that we take every second. All comes from this. This is our savior, and the very thing that is saving us, we're killing it. So we are who we have been waiting for. No, nobody's coming to save us. All the prophets of old have spoken. They gave us the knowledge, the wisdom, the information. Everything is here. All these things are gifts. But if we want to destroy it, well, in the end, we destroy ourselves. But if people that came to this turtle island listen to the indigenous wisdom and teachings, and we start to take it wholeheartedly, and we stop, and we say, okay, what are we going to start to do different? We can. It's not that difficult, but it means getting out of ego, getting out of this thing that I'm right and you're wrong. And we come now from this place of, look, we're in this together, so let's put our best common minds together. And let's look at the solutions of what we're going to do now for those future generations that are in peril. So with that, I'd just like to say, thank you to all of you students who will be hearing some of these teachings and all of that.
And that was Kevin Deer speaking to students from McGill University. And you can watch this talk as well. You've just heard it, but you can also watch it on McGill University's YouTube channel, and just look for Environment and Sustainability with Gana Sohon Kevin Deer. And Kevin Deer is a Ganyagahaga Mohawk faith keeper in his traditional longhouse in Ganawage. You have been listening to Equilibrium on CKUT 90.3 FM. Thank you so much for listening. You can always email our show, Equilibrium, by emailing us at equilibrium@ckut.ca. You can follow us on Facebook by going to facebook.com/EquilibriumCKUTMontreal. And we do have a little website, which is equilibriumradio.weebly.com. And there you can find a link to our SoundCloud. And we also have an affiliated podcast on Spotify, which is called the Equilibrium Radio Podcast. All right, folks, have a great rest of your day. And we're going to leave you with some music from Brian May. Brian May, who we've actually interviewed on this show before. Brian May, the guitar player of Queen, but also, you know, a songwriter, an astrophysicist. He has a long list of accomplishments. And the reason why we interviewed him is because he's very active in the animal rights movement in the UK, animal welfare and animal rights. So he recently re-released one of his solo albums from the late 90s, and there's some extra tracks that were released, including some live tunes from some of his solo live shows. We're going to leave you with a performance, a little bit different, of the Queen song Hammer to Fall, which Brian May wrote. Hammer to Fall, of course, is all about living in the shadow of the mushroom cloud, so growing up during the Cold War, which he did, and always being fearful of nuclear annihilation or nuclear war. And hey, some of these issues come back again. I think, yeah, you know, there's some aspects of this song that resonate today. So we're going to play you the performance that happened in Paris in June of 1998. This is Brian May with the tune Hammer to Fall.
Okay, I need my dictionary for this because I want to say something particular. In English it goes, I would like to dedicate this song to absent friends. That's what we say in England. We say to absent friends. And it's les amis qui ne sont plus avec nous.
tall and proud, in the shadow of the mushroom cloud, convinced our voices can't be heard. We just wanna scream it louder.
Previously broadcast program.
Noam Chomsky, speaking from MIT. You're listening to CKUT 90.3 FM.
Here we go, yo. Here we go, yo. Here we go. Here we go, yo. Here we go, yo. Here we go, yo. Here we go, yo. Here we go, yo.
Watch this, here we go again. You want a friend, booming in your Jeep like it ain't no thing. Uptown, downtown, all around town, driving, booming and listening to the sound of the S-E-R-E-E-C-H-Y. Music sweet, you pump it up, I spy. What do I spy?
passing by, walking, rocking while the system pump. Not crisscross, but you make them jump to the beat while booming up the street in your Jeep. Damn screechy, give your lyrics to a leap. Watch that Terry in my rap to the beat. Mervyn Jordan, love off the beat. In your Burgundy color Pathfinder, your Cherokee Jeep or your Land Cruiser, in your whatsoever, which one you prefer? Put in a cassette or flick to the tuner. Pump up the volume, then fix equal.